It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Friday afternoon, the 5th of July. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The latest installment of a popular family film franchise is enjoying huge financial success at the holiday weekend box office. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the economy added 206,000 jobs last month, yet the unemployment rate ticked a little bit higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And when we talk about the monthly employment reports, there's a lot of discussion about what does this mean for interest rates going forward? What does this mean for the fight against inflation? But if you are scrolling those job listings, Rick, on Indeed or LinkedIn, you're probably not thinking about interest rates. You're thinking about how you can improve your family's bottom line. And if that's what you're going out for, what does this employment report mean for you?
Well, we've had what we'd call a marginally positive jobs number, 206,000. Now, it'll probably be adjusted. We don't know if it gets adjusted up or down. But I think what's more telling for us is overall in the economy is the JOLTS number, which is the measure of the number of openings versus the number of people available to work. And that number has stayed pretty stable post the COVID collapse, right, pre-COVID collapse, 2014 level. So we have 3.8% to 4% plus number, meaning we have that many more people available to work. I mean, jobs available than people that are actually working. So it's a more important number to look at than just pure unemployment. Now you look at pure unemployment, 4.1 currently for the U.S. abroad, but you know, Chicago area, it's 5.4, so it's even higher.
We're talking with Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago, about the latest jobs report and what that means for you if you're looking, or if you don't have a job and you're looking, or if you have a job and you're looking and you're trying to improve your salary. Now, we were talking about the great resignation over the past couple of years and that people would leave their jobs, and that if you were a job seeker, you could basically name your own price, negotiate time off, negotiate work from home opportunities. If the labor market is tighter and you do get to the offer stage of the interview process, what can you demand these days compared to a couple of years ago?
Well, I think we have to be realistic about that process. If you are negotiating before you actually have an offer, then you really got things upside down. You want someone to want you and make you an offer before you begin to negotiate. But let's assume that's happened. You've got an offer and now you want to negotiate. You don't want to really set lines in the sand and come off immediately as someone who's going to be difficult. This is your honeymoon period, the offer and acceptance process. So you have to sort of walk that around. What are the most important things to you? Is it flexibility of work? Is it work from home? Is it a hybrid version? Is your healthcare situation critical? Are you expecting a child and therefore more concerned about the healthcare package? And then that's where you want to have enough information about the organization to know what their policies and trends are and to have a pretty good sense of how much in demand you are in that role. And then I think you soft pedal that. So, you know, I'd really like to know more about the healthcare program. You know, are there any exceptions made, that kind of thing? Or you know, what's the policy for remote work or hybrid work? What's the expectations? What's the norm? You know, one of the other ways, more gently, is to ask what's normal for this organization or this department or this function in terms of whether they can work remotely or hybrid, that kind of thing. But don't make it a mandate. Just make it a question. And then as you get closer to the offer and finalizing it, that's one of those things that you can say, you know, I'm really excited about this opportunity. I'm very much interested in doing the job. I'm excited about all the things that I can do in the organization. I'm a little insecure about, and then identify the thing that is your, like, your main issue. I'm a little insecure about the idea of being in the office every day. You know, that's going to be somewhat problematic. And then just shut up and let them deal with it.
Rick Cobb.
Scenario, get the offer. Yeah.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, a look at the big bucks being brought in at the holiday weekend box office for the latest film in the Despicable Me franchise.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Audiences are flocking to theaters to see Despicable Me 4, which is projected to hit $120 million over the 4th of July holiday weekend. We welcome in Paul DeGarabedian, senior media analyst for the box office tracking company Comscore in Los Angeles. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And I have three kids at home, and they associate the Universal Pictures fanfare with the Minions. So chances are I know what I'm going to be doing on our next rainy day in Chicago. And it seems like millions of Americans have done or will do the same.
I love the Minions doing the Universal fanfare when the movie opens. And they're essentially singing that, you know, well-known Universal fanfare. So it's so great. Huge weekend in store for the 4th of July frame. I mean, already Despicable Me 4 has earned close to $50 million at the domestic box office, $27 million on Wednesday, around $20 million yesterday. A big weekend in store, maybe $80 million, $75, $80 million. So like you said, we could be looking at a five-day Wednesday through Sunday gross for Despicable Me 4 in the $120, $130 million range. And Inside Out 2 is a great lead-in for this. Family films are huge. Sequels are huge right now this summer.
Is that really the big winner at the box office so far this year? Family-friendly fare, whether it's Inside Out 2, Despicable Me, the latest in the franchise.
Right.
If it's got CGI animated characters and there may be two or three chapters in the saga, it's just a license to print money?
It really is. And you look at even If and the Garfield movie, which were sort of marginalized in a way when they opened because they didn't open to $100 million. But they've been hanging in there in this marketplace. Inside Out 2, literally yesterday, now hits $1.120 billion worldwide, Rob. That's an amazing performance. We're coming into that film's fourth weekend. So for families this weekend, it looks like Despicable Me 4, Inside Out 2, chasing that same audience. But I think they're going to be additive and complementary, not adversarial, in terms of that box office and that appeal to families this weekend. And there's more big movies on the way. So this is great news, Rob, considering where we were in May. It was May gloom has turned to a June boom at the box office. And now July looks to capitalize on that.
We're talking about the 4th of July, 4th of July weekend at the movie theater with Paul DeGarabedian, senior media analyst for the box office tracking company Comscore, based in Los Angeles. How is 2024 tracking as far as movie ticket sales are concerned compared to 2023? And is this merely a function of the pipeline drying up during the strikes last year?
You called it. That's exactly what happened in the year to date about just prior to Inside Out 2 and certainly before Bad Boys Ride or Die, which was a big opener, bigger than expected. The box office was running year to date about 27% down versus last year. At this point, heading into this weekend, we're down about 18.5%. So we've knocked down that year to date deficit by, you know, a considerable amount already. And so this is great news for theaters. I think a lot of people counted out theaters back in May when we had no Marvel movie to kick off the summer, a dismal Memorial weekend, and people were counting it out. I've done this for over 30 years now, Rob. Never count out the movie business because it's a very unpredictable business, a roller coaster ride indeed. And we're seeing that play out. We've got Twisters on the way. And of course, Deadpool and Wolverine, which will be the next $100 million opener, I'm sure.
And then lastly, Paul, are we still in a situation where we may have to rethink the entire movie theater experience? And I'm only asking this because when television came on the scene in the 50s, the movie theater industry and the movie industry responded with these three-hour epics, you know, the big Bible epics, the Roman centurions, the Western epics, widescreen, VistaVision, technological innovation, creating experiences that you had to see in the theater that you could not get at home on your small TV. The TVs have improved, and does this mean the movie theater and the movie industry has to respond in kind in terms of evolving technologically in their own right?
Yeah, you need to differentiate the in-theater experience from the home theater experience. And you gave a great history lesson there because when television hit, everybody thought that was the end of the movie theater experience. But then they scrambled and created, like you said, those big swords and sandals epic, the widescreen VistaVision, Panavision to differentiate again. And then so you had the TV, you know, TV coming in. Then you had the home video revolution, the home theater revolution, now the streaming revolution. It takes on all comers. But a lot of the great theater owners, especially the independent theater owners, are raising the bar, trying to create an experiential environment that's second to none. And so that when you think about going out, you want to go to a theater, you're going to have a great experience. And it's outside of the home and for a relative bargain. So I think you're right. I mean, theater owners are doing that, but they have to do it even more, I suppose, given the nature of the competitive dynamics of this marketplace, such as it is.
Paul DeGarabedian, senior media analyst for the box office tracking company Comscore in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, we'll examine how giving your kids credit cards can teach them financial responsibility.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Getting a credit card for a teenager can help them build financial responsibility with guardrails and close parental oversight, of course. Joining us with some key advice is Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, Bankrate.com, based in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And I think I might be giving away my age, Ted, as someone who remembers when getting a credit card as a teenager was a financial extravagance from a well-to-do parent. It's like, oh, check that person out. They're paying for clothes at the Gap with a credit card. But now you can't live without it.
I would argue that it's more important than ever to be building credit. I mean, some of it is that credit is such an important part of your financial life, not just loans and lines of credit, but getting your first apartment and even signing up for utility service. And some employers will check your credit reports. I mean, it's important for all those reasons, but also this is not a cash-first economy anymore. And even though a debit card can be basically a replacement for cash, credit cards are great as long as you pay them off and avoid interest because you build credit, you get rewards, you get all these buyer protections. It is really important to start early.
And then when it comes to setting up your teenager with a credit card, should you co-sign as the parent? So in that mission of building credit, they have a little bit of an advantage.
The best approach is technically known as being an authorized user. It kind of operates similar to a cosigner, but true cosigning has actually gotten pretty rare in the credit card world. What's much more common now is you have somebody who's the primary account holder, and then you have somebody else who's an authorized user. This is even true among married couples, but especially with your kids. It's gotten harder to get a credit card before age 21. That was one of the results of the CARD Act, which took effect in 2010. And you know, it was well-intentioned. It pushed credit card marketers off college campuses and made it harder to get your first card, in some ways to kind of save people from themselves of taking on too much debt at a young age. But I think the unintended consequence is that it's gotten harder to build credit, and that's really important. So, you know, yeah, you could get a student card or a secured credit card in your own name, but a lot of times the path of least resistance is just to get on a parent's card as an authorized user. And that can have the added effect of piggybacking off their strong credit history. So it gives you a card that you can use,
But the real benefit is you tap into all those years of hopefully on-time payments.
We're talking about credit cards for your teenager with Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst with Bankrate.com based in New York. Now, this credit card for your teenager, at the end of the day, is an instrument of financial responsibility. It is designed for you to build credit. But I think when you're 13 or 14 or 15 and people say yes to that piece of plastic no matter where you go, even though we're building responsibility, it's really tough to overcome human nature, realizing I can get whatever I want.
It can be, but that's also why it's so important to teach these lessons. One thought is that you can have the credit building approach to authorized user status without even possessing or using the card. So, you know, if you're really worried about this, maybe you add your kid as an authorized user for the credit benefits, but don't even give them the card. Better yet, though, I do like the idea of teaching kids about spending with plastic and apps, but using appropriate guardrails. American Express lets you set limits on how much your authorized users can spend, so that would be one option. You could also look into some of these prepaid debit cards, like the Greenlight card, for example. Now, that won't help you build credit, but it will have the advantage of giving your kid a piece of plastic that they can spend with. And there can be very tight guardrails about where they can spend and how much they can spend. And that's a little bit of a hybrid approach that is moving in the right direction from an education standpoint.
Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Left 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Incidents involving illegal fireworks in Chicago caused several fires and an accident that killed a man on the northwest side. A congressman reports that pictures outside of his Washington office of hostages still being held by Hamas were destroyed. That's according to a Chicago area congressman. On this Entrepreneur Friday, we'll again talk with a local businesswoman who found success in the culinary business after leaving gang life. Plus, we'll examine what an AI voice scam shown in a new movie, how it's especially impacting senior citizens. Business, the markets are mixed right now. The Dow is down 41 points, the NASDAQ up 150, the S&P 500 is up 22. We have 80 degrees right now in Chicago under mostly sunny skies, topping out at a sunny 82 today, not nearly as humid compared to yesterday. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. Leading up to the 4th of July, the Chicago Fire Department warned on Wednesday that fireworks are not safe in the hands of consumers. Leave it to the pros, they said. Fire Department spokesman Larry Langford tells us the department responded to more than a dozen fireworks-related fires last night.
Our teams went out, investigators went out on at least 13 fires last night where it was easy to determine that fireworks was the cause.
In addition, a man on the northwest side was killed last night while shooting off illegal fireworks in an alley near Costner and Wellington. He suffered a catastrophic head injury from a fireworks mortar. Chicago area 10th District U.S. Congressman Brad Schneider, who represents the North Side and North Shore, has reported that pictures of hostages still held in Gaza were torn from the walls outside of his office in Washington. In a statement, Congressman Schneider said it happened yesterday with the poster shredded and tossed across a hallway. Sunday. He called it a vile act of hate that was shameful on any day, but especially on the day the U.S. celebrates its independence. Eight of the hostages still held by Hamas are Americans. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter in Hammond, Indiana. Chuck, thank you for joining us once again today. And it somewhat surprised me to see the market reaction to the jobs report for the month of June. It was a somewhat soft report. It was that disinflationary report that investors were looking for and upped the odds of two interest rate cuts this year. And yet the market reaction to the possibility of another interest rate cut was rather muted.
Well, you know, we're working here, Rob, with two different markets, right? We have kind of the growth side of the market, and we have the value side or cyclical, economically sensitive side of the market. And if you look at the market through those two prisms, it's behaving kind of what I expected. If we're getting into an economic slowdown, as indicated by recent economic data, as well as kind of the labor numbers, then growth stocks are going to be at a premium. People in slow growth environments, they want growth, and they'll put a premium growth. And you're seeing that in the performance of kind of the growth-oriented indices in NASDAQ Composite and, to a little lesser extent, the S&P 500. On the other hand, in an environment where the economy is slowing, that doesn't do a lot for cyclical, economically sensitive stocks. And thus, you're seeing kind of that in the performance of the Dow Jones Industrial Average today, and especially in that economically sensitive Dow Jones Transportation, which is down over 100 points. So I think the reaction to the labor report, in fact, is consistent with kind of this bifurcated market that we've been working with for a while.
Now, we do have the yield on the 10-year Treasury around 4.3%. So interest rates are going down regardless of what the Fed does, just based on the 10-year yield. So that's a little bit of relief for people who are dealing or who are financing debt and in sectors of the economy that are interest rate sensitive. But let's say the Fed does cut in September. And they'll most likely cut by a quarter of a percentage point. What does that do for the economy? And also, what kind of signal does that send? I mean, they're not cutting interest rates out of the goodness of their own heart. They're doing it to prevent an even worse economic slowdown.
Well, yes, and I think that's key. Why are they reducing rates? Are they reducing rates because inflation is under control? Are they reducing rates because now they're fearful of a more of an economic slowdown, or a little bit of both? I mean, if inflation is coming down to a point that they feel comfortable cutting rates, I think that's something that the market will applaud, quite frankly. If they're cutting rates because the fears of the economic slowdown, that's something that the market is eventually going to discount. And I'm not sure it's discounted that yet. It certainly has in the economically sensitive stocks. But, you know, will you start to see kind of growth stocks start trending lower as well, in fears that maybe the soft landing isn't going to be so soft?
Now, we have been talking about just dazzling stock market performance all through 2024, but you always look at the Dow Jones Transportation Index, and that tells a different story. And what is that? What story is that telling today?
Right. Well, it's perhaps the most economically sensitive index there is, I think, in the world. And I've been doing this for a long, long time. And it has not been behaving very well, and it hasn't been behaving very well at a time when you're seeing some of the other major indices do quite well. And so I think that is a tell on the economy, and we're starting to see the data come out that the economy is softening. Now, will it soften enough to go into a recession? Again, I think the transports can be the canary in the coal mine on that. If, in fact, you see the Dow Jones Transportation Average eclipse a new low, say below 14,700, you know, that would be a bad omen, not just for the broad market, but it would be a bad omen for the economy as well. So that's the story it's telling. The economy is slowing, and the transports will give us an indication of just how much it's going to be slowing here.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecasts newsletter in Hammond, Indiana. Thank you for joining us today. Two times he was on at 10:20 this morning to break down the June jobs report. Coming up, a businesswoman from Chicago who transitioned from gang life to culinary success. It's Entrepreneur Friday, and it's on the way.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and today we check back in with a businesswoman who traded her life as a gang member on Chicago's South Side for culinary success, inspiring others through her catering business and food truck, That Jerk Spot. And now she's trying to pay it forward in mentorship programs. We welcome in Lakeisha Hunter, CEO and founder of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner at That Jerk Spot Catering Business and Food Truck in Chicago. Lakeisha, thanks for joining us once again on the show. And before we talk about how you founded That Jerk Spot in 2017. You were in a gang on the South Side, and just what was the appeal of that life before you got into business for yourself?
Hey, thank you for having me back. I really appreciate it. Well, the background story is, yes, as you just explained, I was a gang member here on the South Side of Chicago, where the Chicago Tribune said that I wouldn't live to see 18 at the rate that I was going, and they were correct. But in that time, teachers had invested in me and told me that I will rise above the ordinary. There were so many community advocates that were reaching out to me and trying to get me to take another turn in life, but I just wasn't hearing it. But then I was challenged in high school in culinary arts by my culinary teacher, who challenged me and saying, let go of your gang or you cannot be in my program. And I chose then to be in culinary, and that changed my life. It changed my life. I'm literally living now because of that challenge.
Now, when you got into culinary school, what was that moment when you knew you had fallen in love with the art?
It reminded me of my youth when I was in the kitchen at 18 years old, cooking in the kitchen with my grandmother, who originally taught me how to cook. So it brought back that passion, because I had been taken away from my mother and put into DCFS custody, where I had to be taken away from my family. And so this brought back the memories that I had in the kitchen with my grandmother, the bond, the relationship with family. And that new love made me want to push harder and harder for something that I forgot about prior to. So that's what culinary had done for me.
You know, you tell this story, and it just reminds me of what Anthony Bourdain said about the people who make up a kitchen in his book Kitchen Confidential, and how it's very egalitarian. It doesn't really matter where you came from, what your background was, but if you can do this job and work in this very hot, sweaty, and in many cases dangerous environment, because there's stoves and knives here and there, you can find a new life.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what I did. I was angry with life. Being taken away from my family resulted to the streets that showed me love. But then, you know, with having these different things on my back of negativity, negative sayings, and negative things that I did, the culinary industry, the hospitality industry welcomed me with no judgment. I wasn't able to get in certain schools and certain even high schools and certain jobs I couldn't apply for because of my background, but culinary and hospitality wrapped their arms around me, welcomed me to the industry, and I've been in the industry for over 30 years now.
And so That Jerk Spot opens in 2017. It was a food truck, now a catering business. And what attracted you to that, you know, Caribbean jerk style of cooking?
It's a popular dish in the community, and when I had my brick and mortar, I tried the jerk food, and everyone loved it, and it was flying off my menu, where I'm like, okay, this is a niche that I found. So I perfected that gift and that craft, and now being able to travel to different communities, which is why I went to a food truck, which was to go to different communities to offer what we have here, which brought in more of the community networking, the community activists, and the children in the community, giving them something to look forward to when that jerk spot came around, teaching them and training them, just having fun with the kids and the youth in the community. So that jerk spot created a spinoff of his own to be able to experience the cuisine in a different light.
It's Entrepreneur Friday. We're talking with Lakeisha Hunter, CEO and founder of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner at That Jerk Spot Catering Business and Food Truck in Chicago. When it comes to running a restaurant and running a food spot, how much of the entire experience is the food itself and how much of that is the presentation?
The food is the main presentation. Being in culinary school is all about presentation. And what we serve, we make an art out of our food. When, even when I'm training my staff, everything has to look the same. Consistency, preparation, hospitality, the way you're serving, the way you smile, the way you greet guests. All of that plays a part more than just the actual taste of the food. It's the whole entire experience that you receive when you come to that jerk spot. That's why we are successful, because of the experience we give our customers, from hospitality to the taste of the food and to the presentation.
Now, you are into mentorship. We will talk about that on the other side of this conversation. We have traffic and weather together coming up next, then more with Lakeisha Hunter, CEO and founder of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner at That Jerk Spot Catering Business and Food Truck.
60 minutes of financial planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
We continue our conversation with Lakeisha Hunter, CEO and founder of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner at That Jerk Spot Catering Business and Food Truck in Chicago. Lakeisha, thank you for joining us once again today. Now, you've told the story about how the culinary world basically saved your life. A culinary program, a mentor pulled you out of a Southside street gang. He said, basically, it's either the gang or this program. Take your pick. And you chose the world of culinary, and now you are the owner of your own business. And now you're trying to pay that forward with Rise Above the Ordinary.
Yes, Rise Above the Ordinary, which is what I stated earlier, teacher, pray that over my life. And with giving back to the community, rising above the ordinary, rising above limitations, paying it forward with our youth, our young adult in the underserved community and those reentering society. Rise Above the Ordinary is a 4-week culinary training program designed to meet culinary and social development needs for those enrolled in the program, with the call to serve, you know, and the passion to stabilize and a passion to provide culinary instructions, where the youth can now cause a major transition in their communities of doing better, taking down or bringing down the violent rate, you know, and giving them something to do, because there's not much for them to do. So now I'm offering them the challenge that the teacher in my high school, my culinary teacher, placed upon me, giving them a choice: choose life or choose culinary.
How important is it to have someone older than you tell you that you can make a difference and that you have the talent and that you can be so much more than you are?
It makes the world of a difference, because some of these young people do not have parents in their household. They're raising themselves, actually. They're staying with other friends, or some of them are actually homeless. So they need that positive feedback. They need to know that there's life beyond the street. There's life beyond what they can see. And culinary has shown me that. It had broadened my horizons of what's out here, what's outside of my community and beyond. And in this world, as far as in becoming successful and being an example, that I too can make it out of this situation.
When when you have the chance to look back at your legacy and you look at the success of the business, the success of That Jerk Spot as a dollars and cents free market enterprise, or you have someone who came through Rise Above the Ordinary and says, Lakeisha Hunter saved my life, to you, what is the bigger success?
The biggest success is that they made it out. The biggest success that anyone through my program is that they made it out. The fact that, and they're reaching back. That's the agreement. Once you make it, you have to reach back and help another sister or brother or someone in the community rise up above the ordinary as well. That's all the thanks that I need. I don't need money. I don't need fame. I don't need fortune. I just need to know that I made a difference in the my community and in communities around me in helping these young people get a life worth living.
Lakeisha Hunter, CEO and founder of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship, owner at That Jerk Spot, catering business and food truck in Chicago, also the author of the book, Rise Above the Ordinary, The Life Behind Her Smile. Thank you for joining us today.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.